طفلة تمتطي قوس قزح، طفلة تمتطي قوس قزح من مخيم.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Palestine, a weekly broadcast of news, analysis, commentary, and discussion of issues relevant to the Palestinian struggle for freedom from Israel's continuing occupation and colonization of their homeland. This program features the Palestinian narrative, the Palestinian voice that is too often missing in the presentation of news and analysis in the mainstream media. This Week in Palestine was created by Sharif Pham and is continued in his memory. This is your host, John Roberts. Before we get to Raji Sorani, our featured guest this morning, we want to tell you about an important forum that is coming up that we hope you will attend. The forum is titled, The Right to Boycott, Defending BDS, and will be held on Saturday, October 29th at 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Central Square branch of the Cambridge Public Library on Pearl Street. As you probably know, the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement is gaining momentum around the globe, and the Israeli lobby is striking back. One of their moves is to get state legislatures to pass bills that provide punishments for businesses that support the BDS initiative. As usual, the argument is that supporting BDS is anti-Semitic. Such accusations continue to stampede governors and legislatures, which continue to bow to such arguments for fear of reprisals from the Jewish community. Even Governor Baker here in Massachusetts has bought into the argument and is supporting anti-BDS legislation. He must have been absent when they taught the First Amendment in his school. Boycotts are protected constitutional activity, but that evidently is unknown to Baker and his staff. The forum will address the context and origins of BDS in the struggle for justice in Palestine, governmental attempts to silence this movement across the U.S., and ways to fight back in Massachusetts. The forum will provide a platform for strategizing ways of countering anti-BDS legislation with participants, and we hope that you will be part of this process. Speakers at the forum will include Nadia Ben-Yosef, lawyer and the U.S. representative of Adala, the Legal Center for Arab Minority Rights in Israel; Tamer Gabin, Palestinian-American organizer who currently works for the U.S. campaign to end the Israeli occupation as the governmental affairs associate; and Susan Nicholson, retired attorney and member of the Mass Peace Action. We need to organize to protect the BDS movement here in our own backyard, so please make every effort to attend this forum. Again, it is Saturday, October 29th at 10 a.m. in the morning at the Central Square branch of the Cambridge Public Library on Pearl Street between Green and Franklin Streets. And now on to our feature presentation. This morning you will hear Raji Sorani, the director of the Palestinian Center for Human Rights in Gaza, speaking at a forum entitled Palestine in Focus, Reports from the Ground, that was sponsored by Brooklyn for Peace. The forum was moderated by Jamil Dakwar, director of the ACLU Human Rights Program, and was held in the spring of 2016 in Brooklyn, New York.
So we're going to go get started. Thank you guys all for coming to Palestine in Focus, Reports from the Ground. So tonight we'll be hearing from a distinguished panel about how human rights organizations on the ground in Palestine have dealt with and are dealing with these widespread abuses of human dignity. Raji Sarani is the founder and director of the Gaza-based Palestinian Center for Human Rights, the center dedicated to promoting the rule of law and human rights in the occupied Palestinian territories. Holds special consultative status with the UN Economic and Social Council, or ECOSOC, and is an affiliate of the International Commission of Jurists and in Geneva. The center conducts documentation and investigations of human rights abuses in Gaza. Mr. Sarani is also the 2013 recipient of the Right Livelihood Award, also known as the Alternative Nobel Prize. And finally, Jalil Dakwar is the moderator of our discussion. He is the director of the ACLU's Human Rights Project. So please join me in welcoming our guests.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Jamil Dakwar. I'm the director of the ACLU Human Rights Program. Raji can't travel to the West Bank and the East Jerusalem, or Israel, for that matter. He's able to leave Gaza only when the Rafah crossing point is now controlled by Egypt, but obviously with the overall control by Israel, opens. And that has been extremely difficult for him to get out, just like many Gazans. I will start with Raji Sarani, the founding director of the Palestinian Center for Human Rights. Raji?
Thank you, Jamil. This is a very proper introduction. And very grateful, having this event here at the university. Thank you all, for attending and for organizing this. New York for me means something special. Three things. One, it was the first place to leave. Two, after 17 years of restrictions by the Israeli occupation forces, and they restricted me with sex conditions, I will not go to details, but my wife said, even warriors, even fighters, need some time to rest, and it's about time to rest. And I have been at Columbia University for some time. It was great to sit, reflect, and look to that part of the world from a distance. Second, I knew at the time great people who influenced my life in a way, and I was lucky to meet with them. I met Edward Said, Richard Falk, Chomsky, Jamil Dakwar, and others. And I was lucky, having this quality of people and to have very direct contact. They are forming the creme de la creme of the intellect in this part of the world and the academia. The third, I was thinking when I'm in Gaza, I'm heading to New York. For God's sake, whom I would know, in New York. And fortunately, I was extremely lucky. It was only 1 week, and then I was busy for the coming 2-3 months. A lot of friends, a lot of support, a lot of people interested in the cause. Unlike many have the wrong impression, I think this country has great potential and great people who support just, fair, right causes, among them Palestine and the Palestinian people. So if the government on the wrong side of history, people are in the right side of history. Now, Gaza, it has been written in the Old Testament, forgetting from God's face, is it? 10 years ago, we had fantastic elections in Gaza, and immediately, 3 days after, Israel concluded that they have to sanction Gaza and Gazans. So they imposed unprecedented siege, and this was quickly supported by the Quartet. It's unprecedented siege for two reasons. On the Iraqi embargo, there was restriction of movement of goods, but never ever Iraqi people, their movement were restricted. But in Gaza, there was a restriction of movement for goods and individuals. So 2 million people locked in, and Israel controlling Gaza land, air, sea, from all sides. Whether they say they are occupying Bar or not, the simple definition of the occupation, effective control on the life of civilians. Since 25th of January 2006, when we demonstrated elections, wonderful, great, transparent, democratic. Never I forget that day I was with President Carter touring in Gaza, in Shijaiya, Beit Hanun, Beit Lahia. And he said about 1 o'clock midday, Raj, it's over. You made it. You should be proud. I don't know where I am. Am I, you know, in France or in Austria? These elections going in fantastic way. You are in the wood of arms and you are doing this. You are under occupation and you are able to deliver this. You should be very proud. Because of that, because of this image, we should be held accountable and we have to pay for it. The excuse, the reason, Hamas should be held accountable and they should be weakened. So the siege will weaken Hamas. We warned civilians, those who are the ones who will pay and will pay dearly and heavily for this criminal, illegal, inhuman siege, which forms sort of collective punishment. They didn't want to hear, neither the quartet or the Israelis. And this continued. This brought Gaza to have 60% unpaid or unemployed, 90% under poverty line, and 85% depend on their food and rations on UNRWA, World Food Program, other charities. So practically speaking, they are sending us to be a nation of bigger. They are sending us to the Middle Ages, as literally, I mean, many of the Israeli leaders said. Are we so? We are freedom fighters. We are seeking an end and right of self-determination. We want end of the occupation. And we have no illiteracy in Gaza. And we have one of the highest university graduates percent in the world. We are hitting the record. We have very strong business community. We have enough capital. We didn't need one penny from anybody on earth. And we have very skilled working class. But that's what this criminal occupation about, to put us in such criminal conditions and to suffocate Gaza socially, economically, and the international community dumping some food and medicine. The fate of Gaza with this was more than enough to suffer and to have this level of suppression and oppression. But the occupation didn't satisfy with that. In 6 years, 2008-09, 2012, and 2014, Israel launched the 3 offensives in which literally civilians and civilian targets were in the eye of the storm. And they were really the target of the Israeli military forces. Gaza, 365 square kilometers, very small. It's called Gaza Strip. In it, 2 million people, more now. And it's the most dense populated area on earth. 51 days in the last war, just an example, Israel used drones, Apache, F-16s, rockets with the weight 2 tons, 985 kilos. Gunboats, tanks, artillery, land-to-land missiles, indiscriminately. No safe haven, no safe place in Gaza. None of us thought next morning will come, he or she, or your family would be alive. It's your lottery number. Total discriminate bombing, killing, and there is no exception on that. Deleting entire families, 89 families has been deleted. I mean, people like Najjar family, 29 members, just the time of sunset, iftar of Ramadan, boom, the 29 members deleted. Hello family, 17. Batish, others, name it. And this goes unnoticed. Israel has the right of defending itself. That's Mr. Obama saying, and that's the Prime Minister of UK saying. More? Schools used to be as a shelters for 570,000 people, their houses displayed, destroyed. And they just went to UNRWA schools, and UNRWA gave the GPS through locations where they are assigned, though they have been bombed and targeted, and tens of the families has been killed during this war. We have three fantastic towers in Gaza, like the Twin Towers. They are our Twin Towers. Basha building, Zafer building, and the Italian building, leveled within minutes for no reason. They destroyed our factories. Last 5 days of the war, almost 3,000 factories erased, including those who factories for biscuit, dairies, and they didn't satisfy with that. Even sewage system, bombs, has been destroyed. And according to that, the entire sewage went to the sea. Our power station has been bombed. Name it. I mean, nothing left. Tens of thousands of houses has been destroyed. In some areas like Beit Hanun, Shija'iya, erased. Zanna, erased. Doesn't exist anymore. Hannibal Doctrine has been applied in Rafah and Beit Hanun. And Dahya Doctrine as well has been applied in many areas and places in Gaza. We are not, as human rights defenders organizations, are in defense of Hamas or Jihad or Fatah or PFLP. This is not our business. They are a resistance group. They can manage with themselves. They have their rules of engagements. We are talking about entirely civilian people. Rightly, as you said, 551 children has been killed. 432 women has been killed. I would imagine this number only. If it was Israeli, what will happen? There is no holy blood and unholy. There is no holy suffering and unholy. There is no holy pain and unholy. Every human blood should be dignified, respected. We said rule of law should be applicable in that part of the world. That's why we have to represent our victims. And we were doing this work under the bombing, under the killing. And we filed, I mean, all these cases, almost 1,100, to the Israeli MAG, Military Attorney General, who legally, I mean, should be in charge of investigation any suspicious war crime. Flashback, he was the one before the war and after the war who said, my office examined from A to Z all the targets basket of the Israeli army, and we agreed on it. It's absolutely legitimate. It's the same one who proposed what's called amendment number 8 of the tort law, which says this amendment that if the Israeli prime minister, minister of defense, or commander of one of the areas, middle or southern or northern, declare a state of war, no accountability except on very personal accounts of soldiers or officers. So no accountability. We filed all these cases, though we know in advance what is the result. And after almost 2 years, I can assure you one thing. We achieved zero level results. Of course, we launched very severe campaign against our president and the political leadership during the war to sign, ratify Rome status. Signed. And ratified Rome status. And we engaged, I mean, with this. But due to the pressure mounted by Israel, the oasis of democracy in the Middle East, and due to the pressure mounted by Europe and others, this was delayed, I mean, you know, for some time. The war was a real good opportunity for us to do that. And we managed, I mean, to pressure and to convince different political parties to agree on that. And we proceeded with the ICC, and we engaged Shawan, myself, other colleagues, with the ICC prosecutor. And we are going with that. They decided to make what's called preliminary examination stage. And this is going on. Hopefully it doesn't last like Colombia or Afghanistan. We don't have their tolerance. We want things, I mean, to move quickly and swiftly. They have all what they needed. Nothing in this conflict wasn't legally documented. Everything under control. And from there, we are engaging with this. Shawan Jabbarin and the staff of Al-Haq, it's not secret anymore, faced threats, death threats, because we are engaging with such quality of work. You know, to that extent, Israel and the Europeans and the American governments makes us feel as if the Palestinians, who are the ones who are invented the Geneva Conventions, the Palestinians who are the one who invented universal jurisdiction, the Palestinians are the ones who invented the Rome status and ICC. All what we want, simple and clear. Dignity for victims and their families, because we have no intention to be a good victims. Two, want accountability according to rule of law. International law, international humanitarian law, it's not there for intellectuals or academics, I mean, to discuss in the colleges or in the conference rooms. And we want accountability as a mechanism of deterrence and guarantee this doesn't happen again. The siege is a criminal. The war crimes should be there to be held accountable in a court of law. And as representative of victims, we have simple slogan. We have no right to forget or to forgive those who are committing war crimes at the daylight against Palestinian civilians. Thank you.
I'm just going to ask very short questions as a follow-up and give you a chance, maybe 2 or 3 minutes, either to relate to some other things that were said or to answer the question that I had in mind. You talked about the suffocation of the people in Gaza, and but still the resilience and how the people are fighting back in different ways, and particularly civilians figuring out a way to survive. Can you give us a sense of the rebuilding of Gaza, which, as you said, I think in the media, was basically was sent back to the Middle Ages. And what we hear, only 3,000 homes out of the 18,000 homes destroyed have been built since the last war in 2014. Can you give us a sense of what is happening, going on with that, and what is the hope for the people, you know, on the horizon? What is it that you think you could be done in the short term to alleviate to lift the siege and the blockade in a way that will allow the Palestinians in Gaza to be able to regain more of their rights now that they are in that position? Can you say more about the reconstruction, if there's anything going on, what that means for the people in Gaza?
Was at the time the European Baronet Ashton, at the time she was the European Foreign Commissioner, we were having a meeting with her in Gaza, and I said to her, I'm scared to death of one idea, that this siege will be institutionalized, and if this happens, this is real disaster. She said, no, don't even think of that. This is on our bodies. This is something temporary, we are sure, and we will not allow it to continue as such. First war happened, second offensive happened, and the third. In 6 years, away from all the killings, injuries, destruction, people want to go back to life after the war. So they want to rebuild farms, houses, hospitals, schools. Israel have the upper hand, and they do impose the siege. On the last offensive, the special envoy for Secretary General in the Middle East for peace process, His Excellency Robert Seri, struck a deal with the Israelis. OCHA comment on it. What they say?
So it's,
according
to
the body of the UN, specialized body, yeah, they said if this happens, Gaza needs 20 years to reconstruct what has been destroyed. A couple of weeks ago, we were having a conference in Paris about Gaza, and the UNRWA director proudly said, we managed to rebuild 17 schools, and we handed over in the last 6 months about 300 units. I mean, so on this front, what's going big shame on international community? They are just leaving us for criminals. We don't ask, we don't want more than rule of law. It's not us, it's the ICRC, the Red Cross, says this is inhuman, illegal, war crime, collective punishment, should be lifted immediately. Not partially, but completely. There is absolute consensus between all international human rights organizations, UN bodies. It's not us who says that. Israel deliberately, intentionally doing this, and they want you as a Gazan not even to treat your water. Our water undrinkable. We have no right to treat our water because the chemicals which can use can be used for rockets and explosives. We are not allowed to treat our sewage because of the same reasons. You know, sometimes they make me feel that they are scared from security, as if we, the Palestinians, have the nuclear arms, and as if we, the Palestinians, have the fifth strongest army on the world. We, the Palestinians, you know, strong enough to threaten the entire existence of this Israeli state. They want to monopolize the word victim. No other body can be a victim except a Jew, except Israeli Jew. We didn't persecute them. Europe did. And when they did, they came to us, to the safe haven, to the warm hearts. We hosted them, we received them, and we became the victim of the victim. 70 years after, they are victimizing us in the front of the whole world. They don't want this situation to change. They want to amount more and more pressure, day and night. They want you to give up. They want you to leave. They don't want you to exist there. No other meaning. It's fantastic. I'm proud that I'm Palestinian. Honestly. I'm very proud. And I'm proud I'm Gazan. And I'm proud we are part of this. Because nobody giving up. And we have no right to give up. And we have no right to be good victims. And we know better than anybody else, we are in the right side of history, right side of morals, and they can defeat us and be superior in anything except one thing. We will keep having our moral superiority in such a criminal occupation. Regarding one and two state solutions. To make the story short and simple, in 1974, Bruno Kreisky and Ulf Palme of Sweden approached Chairman Arafat, and they said to him, listen, Palestinian PLO charter, very destructive, and you are calling for one state solution. And this is interpreted in Israel and the West that it's a call for destruction of Israel. Are you really intending to destroy the state of Israel? Anyway, they concluded that he will recognize from Geneva the two-state solution, and he made this incredible political compromise. I mean, he compromised 78% of historical Palestine, and he said, yes, we are happy and ready to live in Gaza, West Bank, including Jerusalem. Bruno Kreisky died, and Ulf Palme has been assassinated. and the promise of working hardly and swiftly to achieve and conclude Palestinian state never has been realized. Later been concluded with President Arafat, also accords, which we are not big fans of. And this was supposed to be confidence-building measure between the two parties, and at the same time concluding Palestinian state in May 4th, 1999. Leit Rabin has been assassinated, definitely not by a Palestinian, and President Arafat was assassinated and definitely not by a Palestinian. All of us know who is there. Now, for us, believe me, this is very intellect discussion. We have no reference. If we call for one Palestinian state, they will say, aha, look to these people, they want to destroy the state of Israel. It's vice versa. They are calling for the Jewish state now. I don't know, is it Khomeini or the Pope in Rome? I mean, who's talking? These are the people who are, supposedly the oasis of democracy in the Middle East. Now, of course, what Netanyahu and his saying and doing, de facto and de jure, the fait accompli policy, no two-state solution. Now, for us, if they want one-state solution, we are happy and ready. If they want two-state solution, we are happy and ready. We are the stones of the valley. We know no power on earth will take us from there. And we know that we will be there as we have been since ever. We will continue there forever. But Israel should decide what they want. We know what we want. They don't know what they want. Now, this six conditions, I mean, it's a very long story. Now I'm blacklisted in the U.S. and I come with a special waiver. I mean, just, okay. But in 1990, a group of Columbia professors invited me as a way to come to Columbia at the time, to join a course for young lawyers at Columbia Law School. So they worked very hard, and they get me out. And in Gaza, I was summoned. I didn't have, any clue about it by the civil administration governor. And then I sat with the legal advisor, and he said to me, you can leave, but with six conditions. And these are a one direct flight, Lod, Tel Aviv. You cannot go to any, Lod, New York. And the second, you are restricted to New York City. You are not allowed to be in touch with any PLO, or any affiliate organizations with the PLO. You are not allowed to be in any public meetings or media or press or lectures, whatever. You are not allowed to be in any connection with any organizations, anti-Israel, Zionism, or Judaism, at all. I really didn't want to leave. I mean, but as I said to you, I'm happy, I'm working, I adjust myself, I leave the mathematics and the chemistry of Gaza, but really, we were tired, me and my wife. I has been imprisoned, like six consecutive times. My house, almost in weekly, bi-weekly basis, raided my office, etc., harassment, summoning, admits. Amir, I am so part of that. Anyway, in the end of the day, you need a break. And she said, New York, little bit bitter than Gaza, so let us, live there and to have some oxygen, because it's long way to go. So under these conditions, we came to New York.
We unfortunately don't have more time for questions, but I want to give Raji and Shawan the last word, briefly to conclude, and then by that we will conclude our event.
Raji? To be open and very transparent and very frank, Palestinians always has been the victims of the Israelis. But the problem in the Israeli left, they always insist to think how we have to think and behave. And this is big wrong. I think we are mature enough and have mind enough to think and to know what we want. And nobody on earth in need of peace more than the suppressed and the oppressed. And I don't think Palestinians are exception on this. They are so passionate for peace, but we will have no right to give up. This is one. Second, everyone should know we are entitled for something called self-determination. It's our right and our obligation. We have the right to resist the occupation by all ways and means. We have no right to be good victim. Last three wars, people like myself, because we are aging, we feel shame because we were sitting home. If I'm younger, with this death and the crimes, we'll take arms and fight those who are committing war crimes against our families, against our children, against our people in the daylight, in front of the whole world. And these war crimes were broadcasted live on air at the real time to the whole world. So we are entitled to self-determination. This is not intellectual discussion. This is first class, legal, political thing. And this is not classical occupation. This is belligerent, criminal occupation who do very systematic war crimes. We are not living in ease. We are not enjoying your soft life. And we have something, proverb in Arabic, we say, the one who count the slashes is not the one who is having good in their skin. We are having this pain and suffering for years and years and years. I was saying when I kicked off the discussion that it's a miracle. We don't have Daesh. We don't have ISIS in Gaza. Because all the ingredients they did to make you unbalanced, to make you giving up, have no hope in the future, and lose completely your strategic optimism. No, we are not losing our strategic optimism. We are not losing our wisdom. We are not losing our patience. We know this is unique conflict, but we will go with it, irrelevant how painful it is. But once again, I think it's about time for the Israeli left to stop thinking on behalf of Palestinians. The second thing, I'm insisting to talk about Abu Kabir Hospital because I personally represent many dead in custody and outside custody, and I brought international experts from US, Netherlands, UK and others. Always, always we were having something wrong and something mysterious. And always the doctors we brought as representatives of victims said there is a big wrong and something. And they were denied having samples, having this, having that, etc. And always there was something wrong in this. What exploded this issue of parts and pieces of Palestinians, not because we are Palestinians, who cares? They stole, destroyed, transplanted this and that from Palestine. Who cares in Israel? It has been disclosed because they discovered the remains of Israeli soldiers inside the Abu Kabir. And they were used, parts of it. And Yehudas, who has been in charge of the autopsy department in Israel, the official governmental one, for almost 30 years, subjected to very severe interrogation, and a little only has been leaked through the media, but that's, you know, in the end costed him to fire him and has been replaced. I don't want to talk about specific cases, but for you, the Americans, look to Richard Khoury case, and you will know a lot about it.
That was Raji Sarani, director of the Palestinian Center for Human Rights in Gaza, speaking at a forum in Brooklyn, New York. And that is our program this morning. Thank you for listening to This Week in Palestine, a weekly feature of Truth and Justice Radio. You'll find us here at 90.3 FM every Sunday morning at 8 a.m. You can also stream us live on your computer at WZBC.org. To hear the program later in the day, we realize that 8 a.m. on Sunday morning is awfully early for some, or to listen at any other time via the archive found on the WZBC homepage, simply click on Archive and go to Sunday morning, 8 a.m., and click on Listen. Each program is on this archive for only 2 weeks. After 2 weeks, to reach our permanent archive to hear any of our past broadcasts, go to truthandjusticeradio.org. All one word, truthandjusticeradio.org, and click on This Week in Palestine Archives. It is all there. Thanks for listening, and we hope you will join us again next Sunday and every Sunday. You are tuned to WZBC 90.3 FM, Newton, Massachusetts. And this is John Roberts wishing you a good morning.